Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Rupa Prabhu, Chief Linux Architect at Cumulus Networks here. On this episode of the podcast, we're going to talk about Linux eBPF with a focus on networking. And joining us today is David Ahern, a very well-known kernel developer, Linux kernel developer. You probably already know him by his WRF work. He is the Linux WRF guy. He has a lot of contributions in the Linux routing stack. And he is very passionate about switch dev and open networking and Linux networking. He's also the IP route to upstream maintainer. I will let him introduce himself. David?
Hi, Rupa. Yes, I'm David Ahern, and you know, good or bad, yes, the whole WRF thing is me. And right now, I'm currently a member of the kernel group within the systems team at DigitalOcean. And I, like you said, I am a huge fan of Linux networking, it working properly with things like switch dev and also XDP. You know, want to see XDP and the Linux stack working together to do good stuff.
Cool. Let's get started, David. Yeah, XDP, we'll come to that in a few minutes. So this episode is about eBPF, and many of you must have already heard about eBPF, and there's a lot on the web in the Linux networking world. Not just networking, Linux, all Linux subsystems. But we'll be talking about networking here. So David, what is eBPF, and how is it different from the classical BPF?
So eBPF is, what is the E? It's enhanced, I guess, is the current, what the current E stands for.
Extended, yeah, extended BPF.
So the older classical BPF was kind of limited, and I think it was really started more like packets coming into a socket. So for example, TCP dump and a packet socket, and you had some operations that would check that packet and say, do I care about it? Right, or just have the kernel kind of drop it for you. And eBPF is an extension to that. I don't know how far we want to go into the details on this.
That is good enough. So, and classical, other examples of classical BPF is, you know, many of these protocol implementations on Linux today, like LLDP, actually uses a packet socket with a filter in classic BPF to actually capture packets. Draw packets or filter packets. So let's talk a little bit about what motivated eBPF. As extended eBPF means it gives the Linux kernel extended capabilities for programmability, acceleration, and observability, etc. So acceleration is one important aspect, and David, are there any use cases where you can describe? I know we'll go into XDP in a while, but maybe you can lead us from this to XDP somehow.
Sure. So the eBPF has really kind of taken off, and at its essence, it's a programmability aspect for the kernel. So any user can write a small program in this certain language, which now it's expanded out to C-based programming. And you can attach these programs to all kinds of different points in the kernel. For example, trace points that have been created over the years, K-probes as you're trying to dynamically figure out what's going on with the kernel. There's C-groups, attach points, sockets, the old classical extension for sockets. So really, there's like so many different places that you can put a program. And this programmability aspect on like trace points and K-probes is extremely useful for dynamic debugging, for example. So I guess some recent examples for me, sometimes hypervisors are dropping packets and you want to know why. And the old dropmon, dropwatch kind of capability, it could tell you the instruction point, but that was it, right? So you could get a counter by ICMP packets dropped at this point, or IP receives dropping packets, at this point. But you really didn't know what flow was being affected. And so I wrote an eBPF program and attached it to the K-free drop K3 SKB tracepoint and essentially send 64 bytes of that packet up to user space, and then user space can do a summary. And so it's allowed me to do things like, my program can do things like, here's all the packets dropped that were destined to this MAC address, or here's all the packets that were sent from this source MAC address. And so it helps you quickly find, are these intentional, or are these packets showing up at a host and they really shouldn't have? So those kinds of scenarios. So that's that flexibility where I'm debugging a problem and I have a wide range of options for collecting data and sorting that data based on what I need at that moment.
Yeah, and I'm assuming it's very performant that an eBPF program can filter it in kernel before your user space application can spend all the cycles to filter it, right?
Sure. Yeah. Like in this case, so I've seen, Ito, for example, has done one for hardware-based drops. And so when Switchdow, for example, is dropping packets in hardware, you can set a trap. It sends those packets to the CPU, and then the CPU can analyze those packets and kind of give you some flow analysis. He chose to do his analysis on the tracepoint itself and the kernel side in eBPF, where I've said, I'm not sure what I'm debugging at that moment. Just send me the data and let user space kind of analyze this in multiple different ways based on what I think the problem is at that moment. So it is that flexibility of same idea, same concept, but is the programming, is all the complexity being run inside the kernel at the moment to reduce data going to user space, or is it just send the data to user space and do the complicated stuff in user space?
Yeah. And this programmability has found various applications in various subsystems, right? And we will come to that as well. Extending a Linux kernel functionality with eBPF has, yeah, it's like Brendan Gregg calls it, gives the Linux kernel superpowers. Okay, now let's talk about the acceleration bit of it. I mean, with larger speeds required from the Linux kernel network stack, and Linux network stack is a general purpose network stack. There are specific use cases where people don't want some of the overhead, and that's where things like solutions like DPDK play in. But eBPF is soon becoming an answer to the Linux kernel's answer to some of those requirements or some of those specific use cases. So can we talk about that a little bit? That's where XTP comes in, and how, what is XTP? XTP is accelerated kernel data path or accelerated data path. So David, what was the okay, we know the motivation for XTP. So how did it all start after eBPF was, I mean, being used for development? Can we dig a little deeper in telling our viewers about how XTP works and yeah.
It is that common refrain about Linux is that it's quote slow, and it is a general purpose operating system, which means it's got all kinds of features and flexibility, but each one of those features becomes yet another branch and yet another check that has to be done, and it does have an impact on full speed ahead. And things like DPDK have tried to just bypass the kernel completely, take everything up into user space, and that's not the right answer either. What you really need is, again, this programmability aspect where someone says, I know certain packets can take a fast path. And so XTP gives them that fast path, right? So eBPF, providing the language by which you can write a program, and then XTP refers to attaching that program at the NIC driver. So it's the lowest point in the Linux networking stack that first sees, oh, there's a packet to deal with. Oh, I have a program that I'm going to run against this packet. Let's run the program and see if I'm going to do something with it. For example, redirecting it to another network interface. Or maybe I want to remove a header from it. Or maybe I want to change the header and send the packet right back out. Right? So there's a lot of these cases where you don't need full stack processing. All you want to do is just make some quick change to it or do a quick lookup and forward it. And so, eBPF provides the language, XTP provides the location and run that program, and it lets you bypass a lot of the overhead of a generic operating system.
Yeah. And one of the other case was, you can drop the packet as well. For the longest time, the best benchmark for XTP performance was drop millions of packets at this particular rate. That was
Right, and I
pretty,
think
yeah.
that's going after lowest point in the stack, first sees the packet, the minimal operation you can do is drop it. And so, how fast can you do something so basic? It's really kind of a benchmark of, look, see how much faster this is when we're not allocating a full SKB for it, when we're not sending it all the way up to IP receive and the NetFilter hooks to run NetFilter actions on it and say, oh, yes, I'm dropping this packet. Right? So you spent a lot of time analyzing something that you're just going to drop. Where an eBPF program at the XTP level says, you get the ability to drop that as fast as possible, as soon as possible.
Yes. And if I remember correctly, it came out of Facebook, and Facebook is deploying or has been deploying since a couple of years XTP for its DDoS and load balancer applications, if I remember correctly.
That's a few of them, yeah.
And so
Think it was,
XTP, yeah,
my
go ahead.
memory is saying Tom Herbert is the one that came up with, maybe it was Tom in conjunction with Thomas Graf. So
I
it was
think
in
it was
that time
Tom and
frame.
Alexei. Yeah, it was in that time frame, and both worked at Facebook at that time, if I remember correctly. So XTP requires your NIC driver changes. I mean, NIC driver has to support an XTP program or running of an XTP program way early, as soon as the packet is DMA'd. So we have seen, I mean, over the past years that many of these NIC drivers have been converted. Can you name a few that you have played with, David?
Yeah, the ones I'm using right now, Solarflare, they recently added support in the upstream kernel, but their out-of-tree drivers had it for at least the last seven months. Mellanox has had support for a while. Intel i40E has support, and I think Broadcom's VNX2 as well. Those are the NICs that I have access to, and I tend to work mainly on Intel, Mellanox, and Solarflare. And it kind of gives that range of capabilities and support over the years as well. So you kind of get a little insight into, it's not like when Tom Herbert came up with this idea of XDP, instantly all drivers supported it. It really has been this slow evolution of getting not just the ability to attach a program at XDP, but also the other capabilities like redirecting a packet to another network interface or sending the packet right back out the interface that it arrived on. So, for example, I think the load balancing case is one of those where you receive a packet on, say, ETH zero, make some changes to it, and then just send it right back out ETH zero, right? And so each one of those XDP return codes requires support from a driver. And as I remember right, if I remember right, memory management was one of the biggest hurdles. So when you have an XDP frame, that's memory that's behind it. And that memory has to be accounted for. So if you redirect it to another driver, for example, right, managing that memory, allocating the memory, and doing it in a very fast way, which is what Jesper's been focused on, has been some of the key sticking points for getting good driver support for it.
And I also remember having somebody introduced, I think it was David Miller, generic XTP to get the default XTP support, I would say. Is that correct?
Yeah, so in this case, you're running an XDP program not in the driver, but more in the core kernel code. And it lets you try out certain capabilities on hardware that doesn't have, the driver doesn't have support for XDP. But as you get further along into your development of XDP programs, the generic mode can be a source of pain because too often, for example, a lot of the samples that are in the kernel will silently drop back to generic mode if the driver doesn't have support for something. And generic mode will fail in ways that proper driver support will not, for example.
Got it.
And so you're running around scratching your head. You're like, why is this not working? Everything looks right. And then you come to find out, oh, darn, my virtual machine doesn't have all the settings properly set up. It didn't attach at VirtIONet. It attached at the generic level. I got to go fix that, right? And so the best fix is just to say, only do driver mode. If you can't do driver mode, tell me, because I don't want you falling back silently to generic.
That's an interesting point to keep in mind. I know I've seen some reports of performance, confusing performance reports due to, implicitly falling back to generic XTP. So you mentioned Word.io. So as people know, Word.io and Weath are the drivers. These are virtual drivers for virtual machines and containers and so on. So XTP fits many of those use cases as well. And I know, David, I've been seeing some patches from you working in those areas. So can you give me a little bit of, and our viewers, a little more info on what are you doing with XTP, with containers or virtual machines?
Really, like when I started DigitalOcean 6, 7 months ago, I wanted to know how I could convert the existing capabilities into XDP. Like, what's missing and what are the gotchas that exist today? And that's really what my talk at NetDev, supposed to be next week or I guess 2 weeks from now, that's what I was going to talk about. So as I started going down this road of getting XDP to work with virtual machines, I kept hitting roadblocks. And some of those roadblocks are because settings, for example, in what the virtual machine needs to have, either capabilities-wise or offloads that are disabled. And so, for example, one of the patches I sent out more as a, hey, we need to discuss this, is VirtIO today. If you have a virtual machine and you want to run XDP inside the virtual machine, you need to start the VM with vHost threads that are with multi-queue vHost, multi-queue tap device, and then vHost threads for all of those. And you need to have twice as many queues as CPUs per tap device. And that's a really high resource requirement, right? So I think the example I put in the RFC was a 16 vCPU virtual machine, which is, reasonably common. You would need 32 vHost threads per tap device. And if you've got both public and private networking, that means you've got 64 vHost threads running around in the host operating system, which is a lot to deal with from the hosting side of it. And so the RFC was, hey, this capability is only, these resource requirements are only needed if you're going to do XDP TX, which means a packet came in on 8.0 and you're sending it right back out 8.0. If you don't have that capability or you don't want to use that kind of capability in your program, there's no need to require this these vHost threads and this and these multi-queues to handle both normal incoming SKB traffic and then the XDP traffic. And so that was one of the recent patches. The other one, which is a much bigger project, gets into today, when you run XDP programs, they're attached to the driver, like I said earlier, but they're only run on the RX side. So a packet that's come into the Linux operating system, and you're like, what am I going to do with this packet? Well, there's plenty of use cases, especially around virtual machines, where you want to run a program on the TX path, right? And so that capability doesn't exist today. And rather than trying to contort programs to where I have everything stacked up on the host NIC and then requiring VM traffic to hairpin out to the switch and back, it'd be much easier and much better from a design perspective to be able to put some programs on the host NIC, some programs on the VM's tap device. But what that means is the tap device between the host and the VM, that's the TX path, which you got to kind of stop and think about, but the directions are relative to the host operating system, right? So you're transmitting a packet to the VM, and I want to run a program on that. And so that's the capability that I've been working on for the past few months.
Okay, cool. And to our listeners, David, the NetDev conference that David was talking about was going to happen in the 2 weeks from now, but it's postponed. But that is a good XDP tutorial. It's NetDev is a once a year Linux networking conference. Okay, and I think we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Oh, there are some other sides of this as well. So, I mean, I know like right now, XDP has an eBPF in general has a lot of mind share. And I think it's important that people understand that it is still maturing and it still needs a fair bit of work for properly handling certain use cases. So, for example, one of the things that's outstanding with XDP is the ability to leave hardware acceleration on and not lose access to information. So, for example, Saeed has the whole hardware hints, which is things that are done in hardware, and how do you make that capability or that data available to XDP programs? And the one that's specific to me is VLANs. So, of course, data centers, VLANs are kind of ubiquitous. And if you want to run an XDP program on your host NIC, and you want the program to make a decision based off of a VLAN ID, you have to disable VLANs. You have to disable VLAN acceleration, excuse me, right? Because otherwise the hardware has stripped the tag and all you get is the inner packet. And so, for example, if you're trying to forward a packet from the host to a VM and the VLAN is very relevant to know what lookups, in terms of looking up which VM should be getting that packet. So that's one area which is really important. Another reason why I was kind of doing this tutorial at NetDev was to say, don't forget about this, because otherwise your program's not making the decision you think it is, because you don't have access to the tag. And it's one of these areas which to me kind of reinforces this idea that you really, in my opinion, like I had said this before about XDP, which is it needs to work in concert with the Linux networking stack, right? So, for example, you have your hardware acceleration, you have your XDP acceleration, you have your full stack processing, and you're leveraging all of that to have the fastest possible networking for whatever you're trying to do.
Yes. And I think all the hardware vendors are on board, right? They are all trying to solve these problems. And to our listeners, I think most of these Linux conferences, there are presentations from these hardware vendors trying to solve exactly these problems. And I agree with you. If you don't want to kill performance by disabling VLAN acceleration, which is so fundamental to getting that performance, right?
Yep. And then from a virtual machine perspective, if you're trying to take packets coming from a VM, and so in this case, it's the RX path, VM to host, and you want to redirect those out, you have to disable checksum, which is a huge performance killer. So this is where it's like XDP has a lot of great potential, but still needs a little bit of work to be done to fully leverage all the capabilities like they need to be leveraged.
Yes, and that work is in progress as well. So on the acceleration front, to our listeners, I just want to mention that IP tables for containers actually had a project going called BPF filter. Was that BPF filter? Which basically accelerated IP tables to millions of rules using eBPF. So you will find that project somewhere on the web if you look for it. I'm not sure if it's in deployment today, but that there were some numbers, great numbers published. So one more great thing about XDP, eBPF using the Linux kernel, in contrast to DPDK, is the helper programs that eBPF provides, or the way it's architected. Basically, if your eBPF program, you don't want to deal with the packet, you can punt it up the stack to take care of, so that you don't have to develop or build the entire network stack in user space. So that is a very critical point. Of course, there is a lot of development still ongoing in that area, but that is the promise of eBPF. And I know Mr. David has submitted a lot of helpers in this case. The main important popular one is the Routelookup API. I think I would say David started this trend of trying to show, I think there is a LPC talk as well, trying to show how you can still use the Linux networking stack and have eBPF, best of all worlds.
Yeah, that was a talk I gave at LPC 2018, and it was really urging, please don't rewrite everything in eBPF just because you can. Really think of, if you look at switch offloads, for example, and you do things in hardware as much as possible, and then you punt to the CPU if you need help. So for example, ARP handling or ICMPs or any of that kind of stuff. Same concept applies to XDP. Let it accelerate packets when it can, and let it punt to the full stack when you need support for other things like ICMP and MTU handling.
Yeah, and route lookup. So your routing database still stays in the kernel. Your control plane still talks to your kernel and has the fib as we do today. It's just that your BPF program can now access the routing table and possibly FTP table and all other tables in the future.
Yeah, and that was the talk at LPC 2018 was about let FRR manage your fib tables and provide the helper so that BPF programs can get on the fly, as FRR, for example, changes entries in the fib, the BPF program immediately gets access to those. You don't have to then duplicate that into maps or anything else.
Yes. So moving on to from acceleration to programmability, what are the eBPF new advancements in, or what areas has eBPF helped to become or to extend Linux kernel or making it more programmable? I'll run through some examples here. TCP congestion algorithms. There is hooks in the TCP code to actually extend congestion control parameters from user space via eBPF program. And this is really useful to many who want to tune these parameters without having to rebuild the kernel or, add code to the kernel to handle some specific case. Google has been, has been spending a lot of time on this and making improvements.
That is a good example of the programmability aspects. And, people get ideas on how to handle congestion all the time and to not have to rebuild kernels, but to use a BPF program. You can try things out on the fly to see if it makes it better, makes it worse, or just developing an idea in general.
Yeah, and if you're, I know there are many people who don't like the idea of updating kernels too often, so this is a very good example of moving towards, extending kernel without building it, which is cool.
Always a challenge updating kernels, and yes. it is this programmability thing, that ability to load and swap out BPF programs atomically. That's one of the huge features to it.
Yep. And the programmability for filters, right? Extending filters in the same vein. TC, the Linux traffic classifier, also has eBPF hook points to, write your own filters instead of using the existing, a million filters that are there. This is also another very big use case. I'm pretty sure the OpenFlow guys or a lot of people use TC for filtering, TC hooks, TC eBPF hooks, I would say.
Cilium is one of those. And, Daniel Borkman made a comment in a post on NetDev recently that was, it really struck a chord with me, something I'm dealing with internally. One of the aspects of eBPF and the maps is that you can pin these maps in the programs such that the user space agent that's managing it can be restarted and the data plane still works. It's a non-disruptive upgrade path, which is a huge feature. I mean, People who have
Wow.
worked in network operating systems for a while know that's always a pain point of how do you restart the
Yeah.
program that manages your forwarding path without affecting the forwarding path.
Like a
For
warm
example,
reboot or warm.
yes. And
Yeah.
so, like trying to update OVS on the fly, brutal. Because as soon as you kill OVS vSwitch-D, everything stops working. And then you got to reconnect the networking, you got to re-add your flows. So that ability to restart user space and not impact the data plane that's an incredible feature. And same goes with the ability to atomically update your data path. The code, the BPF program itself, you can on the fly make an adjustment to that part of it. And so that gives you this, the restartability, the upgrade path, because there's always bugs, there's always things you got to deal with, and you're trying to maintain continuous service and yet still be, have the maintainability aspects.
That is pretty cool. I somehow missed that update. I will go and look for it. Yeah. Do you know what it's called? Is it some dynamic something? The series itself?
Oh, you mean the posting on NetDev?
Yeah.
No, I
The
forget. It was
feature
one of these
itself.
BPF threads, and he
That's
made a
fine.
comment that some customer had killed, I think it was either uninstalled or stopped the programs, the Cilium programs, and they didn't even know for like an hour and a half because data plane was still working. And I was like, well, that's a huge feature.
Yeah. So since you brought up Cilium, to our listeners is one of the projects that provides container security using eBPF to container orchestrators like Kubernetes. And I think it also does telemetry for Kubernetes. I saw a recent announcement. It's an open source project. You can look up and it's also documented from the Kubernetes documentation. So another example I would say, which is close to you, David, is the IP WRF exec. If people have used WRF on Linux and you know how to start a process in a WRF, IP WRF exec is something that David used eBPF. Right, David?
Yep,
Yeah.
this was a 4.10 kernel, and it is a part of developing the VRF feature.
Yeah.
The VRF idea has been around for a long time, and if you look at all the legacy, like Cisco operating systems, there was always a VRF exec kind of a command. Like every implementation of VRF I've ever seen, there was always a capability, and it's needed because it takes time for processes to gain that functionality. And being able to say, if this process is attached to this VRF and to have all of its sockets automatically bind to that VRF, it helps deploy software that's not necessarily VRF aware in a VRF environment. And the way that's done is there's an eBPF program that gets attached to the C group. And every time a process opens an IPv4 or IPv6 socket, that eBPF program will set the device binding on the socket so that it's constrained to the VRF. So,
Yep.
yeah, that is an example of the programmability.
Yeah. And I would like to point out that using Linux native WRFs, it was, I mean, I wouldn't say I don't want to say your work was minor, but using the existing eBPF technology from the Linux kernel, C groups with the eBPF, all this made so nicely fit in. It's a very elegant solution in my mind. Yeah, and it can be used on hosts and hypervisors, everywhere that runs Linux. Okay, so we finished programmability and acceleration. The other use of eBPF has been in the observability space, and Brendan Gregg, right? Yeah, from Netflix. If you Google for observability, I'm sure his documentation and tools and contributions and talks and videos all show up. And I believe, yeah, his blog. Did you say
Well, he
blog
has
or
a
book? Yeah.
book that was
Book,
that just
yeah.
came out, and it's
Yeah.
very popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a very good way of presenting examples and the summaries and stuff that shows, all the different places that you can use BPF to pull information out on the fly. So that observability.
Yeah, and monitoring, monitoring at high performance, right? BPF provides you that performance advantage as well. And trace points, and there is this, what was that? BPF Tools project. It's an IOWISER project, and to which Brendan Gregg also contributes. So to the listeners, I guess BPF Tools and BPF Trace is something that you can search, and you will see a lot of examples and tools that you can start using on your Linux system, actually on Cumulus Linux too, to see how powerful it is.
Another good one that would be, it's good to plug here, is this eBPF exporter from Cloudflare. It's a way to have a program using BPF to collect, so for example, histograms of block IO and have that data exported through Prometheus, for example. That's been another, it's the community aspect of you have an idea, here's a standardized way to you write your own BPF program. It fits into this infrastructure like the eBPF exporter and then makes this data available. So yeah, there's so many good things that have been coming out of this whole eBPF movement from observability and being able to do that without each individual person having to go through the pain and suffering of writing the details that are needed. So if you look at how BCC, for example, creates something like ExecSnoop, what goes on behind the scenes, creating the K probes, reading the data, sending it to user space, showing that to the user. There's a lot of infrastructure that's behind it, right? The simple idea. And so I like the fact that these companies like Cloudflare here of the eBPF exporter are creating a framework and then letting other people just pick that up and then write their own program to fit inside of it.
And I'm amazed at the documentation coverage as well, right? Because kernel developers are mostly frowned on documentation for the kernel, but BPF, it's an outlier. I mean, it's like amazing documentation. They've made special, Cmsnps is the best, and they've made extra effort to actually put a lot of examples out there to enable BPF usage. And a lot of companies who are also contributing are doing so, which is great. And of course, with any Linux subsystem, I think the conference presentations are amazing to see how fast this development is happening and how creative it is. I mean, there's creativity in all subsystems. So talking about a bit of projects, right? We talked about Cilium, which is a container security using eBPF, then Kubernetes. To our listeners, you can go and look at Kubernetes eBPF, and then you will see a lot of ways how eBPF is being deployed. Calico is another project, which routing policies. Yes, I did see a blog from them about how they're using eBPF, which was interesting. Security is also a major subsystem that continues to find various use cases with eBPF. SecComp especially. Monitoring, I know Audit D. Well, today, these days, any subsystem, you can actually type the subsystem name and eBPF, and you'll find some development going on, which is
It's hard
awesome.
to keep up with everything.
But as you see these, it's amazing to see different ideas, creative ways to use it, and you'll end up getting some ideas around this too, deploying eBPF in your systems or infrastructure. Monitoring is a very powerful eBPF is a very powerful technology for monitoring. So
Yeah,
let's
so just to give an example of that, like some of these tools, it's when you think about the legacy way of debugging with perf, you've got trace points, you've got K probes, and yeah, you can dynamically dereference data structures, for example, but often you need to correlate things. So you've got this event happening on this trace point, and then this event happening on a different trace point, and you want to know, like something happened between them. And eBPF and being able to store information in maps and then retrieve that, like the maps getting shared across these trace points, like that's the flexibility that makes observability and introspection now so much easier. Like you're trying to debug some really weird problem, and you can literally correlate all these different things kind of in the kernel itself, as opposed to sending a ton of data to user space and then having to A, keep up, and B, process all that. So
Yes.
that's huge aspects to this.
Yes, definitely. And yeah, coming back to the documentation, I just realized when you mentioned that there are a lot of examples as well, right? Samples in the kernel tree, right? For to people to jumpstart with, especially even for this tracing needs, how do you use eBPF for tracing and so on? So let's talk about development and communities. Just to give our listeners a little more context or a little more pointers, which we can add to our show notes as well, on where to find the code, what libraries to use, and so on.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. If you are getting started with BPF, that you really want to use libBPF as your, the library. You don't want to re-implement a lot of these details. So I have on my GitHub repository, I have several programs. For example, I mentioned the SKB drop analysis. And I could have redone all this stuff myself, but instead I just took libBPF, hooked up to that, and it takes care of a lot of the back end things like loading the object files and converting map references to file descriptors and all the translations that have to happen when you actually push a program into the kernel and have the verifier run on it. So libBPF is definitely the back end that you want to be using.
So is there, sorry, David, to interrupt you, but is there a Debian package for this, or how do people
So I
get
believe all
access?
the distros are working on packages. And it's
Okay.
kind of that it's proven its usefulness, and there's the kernel version, the libBPF that's in the kernel tree. There's GitHub separate repository that is kept in sync. And that's the one that I use because it's easier in terms of having BPF programs in an external tree and having it use libBPF from GitHub is just an easier development cycle than trying to manage what's being done in the kernel because that keeps up with latest and greatest features, as things are going in development-wise. And when I'm developing programs, for example, I want a stable libBPF, not just interface, but things that I've had to comment out, for example, because they don't compile on older operating systems. So anyway, that's the libBPF piece of it. From a tooling perspective, you do need to have recent LLVM, Clang, PA-hole, all these different software things. And so from a management perspective, it gets overwhelming to stay latest and greatest. So if you're using something like Ubuntu 18.04, that LLVM and Clang is good enough, but it's not good enough for BTF, which is the BPF type format, which has a whole other set of capabilities and extensions to it in terms of what you can do with programs and how you can compile once, run everywhere, kind of a goal. So I'm waiting for Ubuntu 20.04 myself. What's another month and a half, hopefully, before that gets released. It should have all the latest tool chains that let you get into the latest features. So
Okay.
I guess the short answer to what you're saying is a new operating system will start having all the things that you need to get started.
Awesome.
IBPF to the latest tool chains.
Awesome. And I think we will add a lot of these pointers in our show notes for the listeners if they want to read. And of course, to the David's talk, which upcoming hopefully this year, David, on
All the pain points I've already gone through, I'm just going to
XDP.
share them, like here's things you need to do, because otherwise you're gonna be like, why am I not seeing? Why is this not working?
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Thanks a lot, David. And this will conclude our today's topic. Thanks for listening, and see you on the next one.